All right, well, welcome. My name is Serena. I'm the proprietor and general manager at Lady Face Ale Company, which is a brew pub in Los Angeles County. I'm here to introduce the speaker of our next seminar titled Beyond the Growler, an analysis of packaging options for the brew pub. That'll be brought to you today by Scott Metzger, owner and founder of Freetail Brewing in San Antonio, Texas. I think he's been pestering the seminar committee about this subject for a while, and I think they finally said, great idea, Scott. Thanks for volunteering. So be careful what you wish for. So Scott Metzger is a San Antonio native and started his professional career in the academic, banking, and oil industries, of all things, before finding his calling in the far more flavorful world of craft beer. From a homebrewer's dream and a vow made on New Year's Eve in 2005, Freetail Brewing was officially opened on Black Friday, 2008, becoming San Antonio's second operating brewery and Scott's first completed New Year's resolution. Huge. Since then, Freetail has been racking up local, state, and national awards and recognition as one of the county's top brew pubs. From brewing 608 barrels in the first full year of operations, Freetail produced approximately 1,100 barrels in 2013 and is in construction on a second facility for both on-premise sales and wholesale production, scheduled to open quite soon, I believe. I know Scott is also quite politically active through the Texas Brewers Guild. I have had the good fortune of working with Scott on the Brew Pub Committee and now as a BA board member. So please join me in welcoming Scott Metzger.
Well, thank you very much. If you have any questions throughout the presentation, I'd say just walk up over to Mike and yell at me, and we'll take them as we go. And then we'll have time at the end also. But, you know, I think this will probably be a lot more productive for everyone if, you know, there's anything that needs clarification or any questions pop up. Let's take them as they come rather than them being lost at the end when maybe we're running low on time. So this is a topic that, you know, kind of spurred because, you know, I've seen a number of articles throughout the years and various seminars, but none of them told me what I was looking for, which, packaging, blah, 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 what is it going to cost? And what's the value proposition in it? So this presentation is really taking a look at a few different options, and there are a ton more options out there, but taking a look at a few of them, what they really cost, and what the real value proposition for your brew pub or small brewery is. So a little background on my brewery. Serena kind of walked through it a little bit, but we opened in 2008 with a 15-barrel brew house occupying about 900 square feet of our 4,700 square feet brewery, which makes me either the best or the worst brewery designer, depending if you're a brewer or a brewery owner. So as all of you know, we have brew pubs. Real estate costs money, and if there's not somebody sitting there drinking a beer and eating food, you are underutilizing your space. So we crammed it all in there. But we were able to knock out halfway to 1,100 barrels last year. 100% of it sold directly to consumers at the pub, but no wholesale distribution at all. In our state, we recently won the right for brew pubs to sell to wholesalers, and we'll be taking advantage of that in the future. But in 2013, every single drop was sold to the ultimate consumer at the pub. So the opportunity here is, as all of you know, when you have visitors come to your pub, people want to not just drink your beer there at the pub and have a good time, but many of them want to take your beer home. For most of us, you know, we offer growlers, maybe a keg, but those both offer limited value in terms of the long-term, you know, marketing value, getting your brand and your image out there, and there's quality concerns perhaps with those as well, because you don't know what somebody's going to do with your growler. I have seen beer reviews on the internet where somebody has taking a growler, hand-filled bottles, and then shipped them to somebody across the country. And then you're wondering, like, wow, no wonder you thought my beer sucked. I can probably figure out where the problem lies in that supply chain. So the most preferred package for customers probably greatly align with the package types that offer the best value proposition in terms of generating revenue. So in my experience, in terms of dollars per ounce, a bomber generates more revenue than a growler, which generates more revenue than a keg. Profitability, in my experience, is a little different. Growler is a little more profitable than a bomber. But you're not also, you don't have the opportunity to sell, thousands of growlers in a day. And if you do, then, you're in the wrong seminar and you should just be at home cashing your checks and driving your Ferrari. But the problem is, bombers are more profitable. And I have bombers on here because that's what we've done in the past. I'm going to cover other package opportunities as well. But typically, your packaged product is going to offer the greatest bang for your buck. The problem is achieving this package type involves the two things you probably don't have a bunch of, which is space and money. Space being a big driving factor. Money, as I'll try to show, should be less of a problem if you're able to execute your package program properly. So in the context of what I'm talking about here, I'm really trying to address brew pubs who have no wholesale distribution. The value proposition changes considerably if you're selling to other retail outlets, but this is primarily geared towards packaging product for sale at your pub directly to the ultimate consumer. So here's just a breakdown of my brewery's sales in 2013 in terms of the various package types. You can see as a percentage of volume, growlers about 7% of our sales, bombers about 6%, kegs about 2.5%. But then if you take that over to percentage of revenue, bombers over-index considerably because they offer the greatest revenue per dollar. So, and then you can see my typical cost of goods in those areas. Kind of gave you a range because it bounces around depending on what we're making at any given time. But that's where it is. So, that package product for us is a real valuable tool. It makes up about almost 9% of our revenue, and for a relatively small investment that we made originally. So, what are your options in wanting to package your beer? Number one, stick to growlers, and if you do kegs, do that. Like I said, growlers are more profitable than bombers typically, but in my experience, I haven't seen any cannibalization of one category from the next. Just because I'm offering 22-ounce bombers of our IPA doesn't mean my growler sales of IPA have been affected at all. They really are operating on different planes and not really competing each other in my experience. If you do have concerns, about that cannibalization, what you are offering in each of these package types can help mitigate that. So, our Imperial Stout that comes out once a year and is real popular, we don't do in growlers. We only offer in bottles. So you can do those sorts of things as well, or, with whatever your pricing structure is for growlers, can drive consumers to the right package type as well. The other big consideration of why, I like moving more and more to growlers, and eventually we're starting to move into cans, is the quality issues from growlers, like the one I mentioned previously, somebody going home, hand-filling a bunch of bottles and trading with their friends, or maybe they just let it sit in their fridge for a month and then you know, their buddy comes over and they drink it and they think our beer sucks and they never want to come to our pub. So, growlers are a great, great tool for the brew pub, but they are a little bit of a double-edged sword. And I find that the bombers help, take that edge off a little bit. Your next option is where we started out when we wanted to do a package, which is hand bottling. You can imagine the problems here. Extremely labor intensive, which makes it very expensive. And then there's quality concerns with hand bottling as well, with oxidation or any sort of contamination issues. And then the speed, obviously, is a big consideration as well. And I have a summary of what kind of throughputs you can expect with these various options coming up. The next option is to plunk down some cash for a packaging line. And this can be as little as, $5,000 or $10,000, can ramp all the way up to $150,000 or more, in a pub setting. So, there's a lot of variability in what you can do there. I've seen on Pro Brewer, I saw a brewery who built their own bottling line out of some PVC, I think. And there are a lot of ways to do it. But what I hope to show you here is that there is some considerable payoff in doing it if you can execute it properly. And then lastly, becoming more and more popular is mobile packaging services. So if you live in a big metro area or in a state with a lot of breweries, you've probably seen these popping up. Typically, there's two different models. There's somebody who's got a couple of Maheen set up for 22-ounce bombers on the back of a truck, or they've got a little canning line that goes in the back of their truck. So they come to you, charge you a fee, package up your product, and then they're gone. This is nice, especially if you have no space at all to consider a packaging line. The downside is you can definitely outgrow it very quickly, and it is expensive from if you compare it to owning your own packaging line. So here's the various mobilization costs I came up with. So hand bottling, I think you can get into hand bottling for about $150, and it's a couple Blickman beer guns that you're running in tandem, from there. Variable costs I calculate out to about $24 a case. So if you're doing bombers, you're at $2 a bottle already, then you got to find a markup and make money. So this is obviously pretty expensive to go out and achieve, and especially if you're looking at only putting out about 4 cases an hour. So, when we were hand bottling, the last run of hand bottling we did, we knocked out 1,000 bottles and took us 11 hours. And that's also with hand labeling. So not a lot of fun. Purchase a packaging line, that can go anywhere from $9,000 all the way up. I put $150 just because that's what I recently paid for our new canning line that has a D-PAL to go with it and a date coder. In a brew pub setting, you're probably not going to spend that much money. But if you have some space and you really want to, maximize, output and get a low cost, you might consider going that way. And then you're looking at anywhere, I calculated out to about $8 a case to $13 a case. And I'm going to go into all the assumptions that I made in calculating this pricing in the next slide. And then you can knock out anywhere from 8 to 80 or 100 cases per hour. It just depends on what you implement and how you put it into use. Mobile packaging, your fixed cost is going to be low because you're and it can even be as low as zero. That $3,000 to $4,500, that's your setup fee for a new label on a can, basically. If you're doing bottles, there's no fixed cost. If you're doing labeled on the cans, again, no fixed cost. It's all variable costs that you're going to have in your labels, and it'll just scale up with your volume. But if you're going to get, even if you're using mobile packaging, if you want to have a printed can that's, your brand, you're going to have to shell out that fee to set up the can. Variable cost, I have it right around $13.50 a case for a mobile canning line that I looked at and got their pricing for and applied my my assumptions to. And they can put out about 80 cases an hour. So here are the assumptions. I'll go through these pretty quickly. These will vary for you, but you'll be able to, if you want, take this presentation back, change the numbers, plug them in for how they work for you, and then do this analysis yourself. So really my objective here is to show the process of the analysis so that you can perform it on your own and for it to suit your brewery. So these numbers are based on my brewery. The first two, those are standard. I mean, that's just dividing ounces and gallons. But I assumed on average about $50 a barrel for beer cost on the beer as an input to the package. I'm paying about $7.37 a case for my bombers. And that's, very low volume. I'm buying them I'm not buying bulk glass. I'm buying them cased already, necks down, washed and ready to go, one or two pallets at a time. So we just, pull a case off the pallet, flip it upside down, drop the bottles, and it goes right into the process. If you're in a situation where you can do bulk glass and you have a depal or something, that you can get that cost way down. Caps, I pay about 1.2 cents a cap. It's important in your analysis to, I always throw in a lot of, try to account for all the caps that end up on the floor. So I actually end up with, 19 cents a case. Labels, 15 cents a label is about what I pay when I order at least 6,000 of them at a time. And I assume 13 labels per case because we stick one on the side of the case. And then labor. So this is the big variable that's going to really drive your savings if you're looking at going from, just hand bottling a special seasonal you have and putting on the shelf to really cranking out volume. This labor cost is what's gonna really make the difference. So here I just assumed $15 an hour. This doesn't even bear any it's not relevant to reality even for me because that's not what I pay my brewers in reality. But it's a good constant number. We can look across all the examples here. Okay, so hand bottling. So you'll want two of these guys, and here's us hand bottling a batch in the cold room, which makes it very uncomfortable. A couple hours, you're sitting in the cold room. We stole this table from the restaurant, and we just started bottling away. So if you have two beer guns, it's going to cost you about $150. And then you just start plugging in your variables. So the big variable here is labor. If you have three guys doing this, it's costing you $45 an hour. They're only producing four cases an hour, so that's $11.25 a case in labor that's going into that. So if you convert it back to barrels at the end, you're looking at $360 a barrel for your package cost, which is, you can still sell that for, and you're since you're selling it direct. At retail, you can still definitely make a profit, but that's a really high number, and so that's the opportunity if you're packaging to chip away at that $24 a case. So what we did back in 2011, and kind of a little more background on us. Previously in Texas, brew pubs couldn't distribute. They could only sell on site to visitors of the pub, but production breweries couldn't sell direct to consumers. So, and brew pubs could also sell for on or off premise consumption. So we kind of had a unique opportunity, and we kind of pioneered the Texas bottle release. We were the first brewery that really had bottles available for sale at the brewery at any time. We started doing rare stuff. You know, people line up at 5 a.m. And wait in line to buy beers. And even at hand bottling, these were becoming more and more popular, so the value proposition was pretty clear to us. So we went out and bought a six-head Maheen, set up for 22-ounce bombers. You can find these used if you scour around, you know, the various sources for used equipment. You know, buy at your own risk. These machines are nice when they're working well, and they will be the bane of your existence when they're not. So, you know, and you'll quickly become an expert at how to fix things in your own, your very own special way. But, you know, it costs about a total cost to deploy the machine is about $57,000, which, you know, it's a pretty big chunk of money for a brew pub to throw down on package. But at the time, we were doing around $40,000 of bottle sales a year at our pub at about 20% cost. So we're, you know, we're netting $32,000 or $32,000 a year on bottle sales. Even if we stayed at that trajectory, you know, we're going to pay this off in 2 years. Immediately after we implemented this, we saw bomber sales go up to over $100,000 a year. So this paid for itself pretty rapidly. And, you know, again, you can see the variables. You know, all of them are the same from you know, from hand bottling to this. The big differentiator is labor. You know, looking at $11.25 a case in labor down to 53 cents a case in labor. And that's your big driver, and that's where you're making all your money. And, your brewers are going to be happier anyway. So that is it. That's where all the money is. So you're down to $13.37 a case. That number you can even drive lower. We're still doing some things that probably aren't to maximum efficiency that we'll continue to tweak. But, you know, we're about 85 cases an hour. We have that thing humming out. I think we can easily, with a few more tweaks, ramp that up to about 100 cases an hour. And you know, that gets that cost lower and lower. And buying bulk glass would be a huge benefit as well. Where you see the bottling line in action here, that's literally where it lives all the time. And that's all the space we have in our brewery to do packaging. So there's definitely not any room for bulk glass. We usually buy two pallets of pre-packaged glass at a time, and it sits out in the middle of the restaurant. And it's, like, really annoying if you're a server. So a couple other options just to throw out there, and this isn't by any means an exhaustive list. This is more, you know, just things I encountered. G.W. Kent has a little forehead counter-pressure filler, you know, $9,000. They say they can knock out 8 cases an hour. So something like that, yeah, it's only $9,000, but where's your labor cost going to be on that thing? You're not really, you know, driving down that labor cost. Wild Goose and Cask both make some small-scale canning lines. The problem you're going to run into with these is that even if it has a small footprint, canning lines can have small footprints. Pallets of cans cannot. And you're going to find your can supplier, at a minimum, is going to want you to buy 8 pallets of if they're pre-printed. Really, they want you to buy a truckload, 24 pallets. If you're buying blank cans that you're going to label yourself, which I know the Wine Coop does here in Denver, that you can buy 1 pallet at a time of blanks, and then, you know, just get some sort of labeling system, either a tabletop labeler, or if you really want to you know, drive down labor, get an inline labeler, and then you can do it that way. And they're making them; they look pretty sharp. You know, the labeled cans is. Is not as wild an idea that it would have sounded to me a few years ago. So, you know, that Wild Goose, the small Wild Goose, two-head manual filler, semi-automatic seamer, you can get that for around $30,000. The guys at Wild Goose were nice enough to provide me with their pricing because I just bought their big one for $150,000. That gets you their 250, which is the aside from the one they just released here at the trade show. That was their biggest one. We bought a lot of add-ons. We got a depalletizer from SKA. That's about $150,000. So it just gives you an idea of what kind of costs you'll be looking at. Unfortunately, you know, like I said, the option for canning is really not going to be viable for most brew pubs because you're not going to have the space. There's a lot of new manufacturers that I'd never seen before yesterday when I went to the trade show out there. So and it seems like they might have solutions that are viable for a lot of small breweries or breweries with small small areas that can set aside for packaging. So hopefully, if you're interested in this, you got their info, give them a ring. You know, it seems like this is a space that a lot more manufacturers are moving into. And then I've also seen some new things emerging from China. I'm sure all of you are like me. You get like emailed by the same four companies in China like 8 times a week. So, you know, I don't know how good those work, but they're out there. So what I didn't consider in the previous screens is your means of labeling. And this can be another area for cost efficiencies. So what we do right now on our bombers is we have this Primera labeler. It's a little tabletop guy with a foot pedal. And you just sit there. You put a bottle on there. You hit the foot pedal. It applies the label. You move it on. Next. You can get that on Amazon with free shipping for about $1,200. Can usually knock out 200 to 400 bottles in an hour. You can really drive down your cost per case there if you have the volume to do it. Get an inline labeler. We just bought one with a date coder for our Maheen. It's about 20, that's the exact price, actually, $27,535 plus shipping and in whatever charges we incur in installing it. So, you know, your options are limited. You know, we talked about cans. Cans are great. I'm super excited about cans. I don't know how y'all feel. But cans, you know, take space, and they may not really be a viable option. So that's where and maybe even the bottling line isn't a viable option because you don't have the space. Mobile packaging units may be able to help you there. Their benefits, you know, very little to no upfront capital outlay. You know, I've seen them that they'll even do a few nice things for you. They'll warehouse your cans. So if you don't have the space for 24 pallets of cans, but you're going to go through them eventually, printed cans, they'll go ahead and warehouse them for you. Or they'll provide you with the blanks if you're just going to do blanks. So they'll kind of be your middleman in that regard for your can supplier so that you're not, you know, having to open up a new credit line and extend yourself that way. On the downside, you know, they're available not everywhere. They're becoming more and more prevalent. I haven't seen as many of the mobile bottling units popping up now. It's been mostly mobile canning around the country. There's a company, I think, called Mobile Canning that, like, franchises out, and you can be like a mobile canning affiliate, and so there may be one coming to your area. I know in Oregon, I hung out with some guys who have a mobile packaging in Portland, but they'll go all around the state if you schedule out in advance with them. So that may be available in your area as well. Another thing on the downside, you know, they're likely to have a minimum volume, which may make it not feasible. So they're not going to come and bring their truck and unload and set up to can 4 barrels of your beer. You know, usually they're looking for at least 15 barrels going into package. Really, they want you at 30 or 60 barrels, which if we had 30 or 60 barrels worth of beer, we wouldn't really be brew pubs, would we? So there's some difficulty there as well. You're also going to have a de facto long-run commitment with this company because if you go ahead and buy pre-printed cans, the minimum order is 8 pallets. It's about 65,000 cans. about 200 barrels of beer. So unless you just want to, you know, make a nice canned Christmas tree for the next 50 years, you're going to want to have plans to use all those cans you buy. Alternatively, you know, like I said, the provider may offer blank cans that you can label or even do a sleeve on. This is going to be more expensive because now you're buying labels, now you're buying sleeves, and you're applying them. So there's about a 27% to 40% markup on the cost to package if you deploy one of these options. And then lastly, these mobile providers are definitely not interested in the quirks of your brewery. You know, they want to come in, have your beer package ready. They're not going to be interested in, like, oh, well, you know, our carbonation's a little off and we need to tweak that, and there's foamy beer going everywhere, and you have, you know, huge errors on your run. They're just going to pack up and leave if that's going to be the case, and then they're not going to answer your call ever again. So that's another downside of these sorts of setups. So here's just some sample pricing that I got from a provider that's local to me. The fixed investment, you know, if like one of the can supplier I use, it's about $3,500 to get a label set up. If you want some nicer, you know, high quality graphics, it's going to be a little more expensive, and that's per label. So know that going in. And then you can see, you know, we insert all our variables. Your beer cost, that's consistent across all of them. But your canning fee, they're going to charge, these guys charge $5.50 a case, $2.74 a case for the cans and lids. Your plastic carrier, so like your PackTech lids or carriers, 72 cents, a quarter for cardboard. And if you're warehousing with them, they're going to charge another quarter per case as well. And then, but the good thing is your labor's low. So, and it can even be lower than this because they provide, you know, their own technicians who are going to bottle up your beer. Usually they ask you to have at least one or sometimes two of your brewers available. But, you know, you're not going to need a team of folks to run your canning line. And you're also not going to have any canning line maintenance issues. So that could be nice for a brew pub as well. So there are a few requirements that these guys are going to have for you, like I talked about. And again, this is based on what I got from one provider. Other providers may be different. But they need to get their canning line within 15 feet of your bright tank, which is, I mean, how you probably should be packaging anyway on a small scale. They're also going to want you to be in a jacketed bright tank, not coming out of a cold room. This is also the case if you have a Maheen. We package out of a cold room anyway, and, you know, because we like to live on the edge. But really, really, you should be right up next to a jacketed bright tank. You're going to need, 8 foot by 30 foot of space for them to come into, and that's clear space. So that's, that may not be doable. That's 240 square feet. That's a quarter of my brewery already. So you may not have that much space to offer. You need a source of clean, dry air at that level. They'll bring their own air compressor, but they're going to charge you for that as well. They're going to want your beer at a certain temperature range, which if you're coming out of a cold room or your glycol chiller is a little old, you know, you might have trouble with as well. And all of these are pretty consistent. You're going to want your beer at this if you have your own bottling line as well. The only difference is if it's your bottling line and your guy's running it, they're not going to have a vendor yelling at you because your beer's too warm, which is nice. So here's looking at the value proposition and the potential cost savings of buying your own canning line. And I threw this in here just as a thing to think about if you have the space. So, your capital, you're going to spend $150,000 on your setup approximately if you do what I did. Minimum order of cans at 8 pallets is going to be $5,500. You can get that cost down on a per can basis if you go ahead and order the full truckload. Minimum order of lids is you have to buy a pallet of lids at a time, which is like 372,000 lids or something like that, and it's going to cost you around $10,000. But you know, no lids. He goes, you know, your cans aren't worth much without lids. Your carriers, minimum order carriers, about $2,200. Trays, $1,000. But then, if you look at what you're getting at, you know, you're basically cutting out that that fee that they're charging you to come and can your beer for you. $5.60 a case. So at about 2,000 or 1,900 barrels, you're breaking even on buying your own canning line versus using a mobile service. So there's, you know, the value proposition there as well. So, you know, I think a mobile service is really great in a few circumstances. One, you don't have space. If you don't have space, it doesn't matter what the value proposition of buying your own is because you just can't do it. Number two is if you're doing relatively, you know, small volumes. So maybe you're only doing like one run, one 30-barrel run a quarter. You know, it's going to take, if you're only doing that, it's going to take you 10 years to pay off buying your own canning line at this scale. So it may not make sense. So moving away from, you know, the various options, after you have your beer packaged, you know, how do you sell it? So, you know, it's not, like we talked, it's not either not economical or not feasible to do very small runs. You know, the packaging company is not going to come can up 4 barrels of your beer, and that's still a lot of beer. And even if you're going to run your bottling line that you have, it's worth more trouble than you want to take just to do a couple cases to throw on the shelf. So, you know, we try to do, you know, at least 20 cases if we're going to fire up the machine, and that's a small run. Sometimes we do about 15 cases, but we're only netting, you know, about 12 barrels a batch of beer. So we can't really, I mean, we don't want to package up our whole tank because we still need it on tap for our customers. So the Maheen works really well for us in that regard, in that it's not too cumbersome to do some small runs. And if you're going to do a few back to back to back, it makes it, it really makes sense. So we can knock out, you know, 15 cases of an IPA, 15 cases of a brown ale, 15 cases of something else, and do it all that way. And we do a lot of wild ales, so we have a full set of change parts for the bottling line that we change out. It takes about 30 minutes. The set of change parts was like $500, so it's not cost prohibitive to be able to switch out that to avoid contamination. But so you're in this conundrum. You know, there's a minimum volume that you want to do to make it worthwhile, but there's, you know, you have to move this stuff. You know, we can't just package up 100 cases and stick it on the shelf and expect it to go away. So how do we do it? So I think in my experience, the key really is product selection and what we're putting in bombers. So we definitely, we never package up our core brands that we have on year round. You know, we just send those in bombers and or in growlers rather. And for the most part, while those make up the bulk of our draft sales on site, they make up a very low percentage of our growler sales. So there's few people who want to take the core brands home. And so why would we necessarily package them up? We try to stick more of our higher-end brands and seasonals, specialty beers, one-off releases. We stick those in bombers. Shelf life is going to be a big consideration. So when we do an IPA, for example, we stick to smaller runs. That's 15 cases because we know we can move those 15 cases in 2 or 3 weeks. But we're not afraid of doing, you know, 200 cases of our Imperial Stout because we know we're going to sell about 150 of them on the day it comes out, and then that last 50 cases is going to take, you know, a month to sell. But even if it takes longer, it's going to be okay sitting in the cooler. And then the biggest consideration is how your packaged offerings are providing a synergy with bringing people back to your brew pub. And that's the big consideration for us. So, you know, our beers we see get traded a lot. And I'm personally kind of I have personal feelings about trading. But one thing I can't deny is that people had come into our pub and say, hey, somebody sent me a bottle of your beer. And now I just happen to be in San Antonio, so I made a point to come to the brewery. Or, you know, somebody gives their dad a bottle, and now his dad wants to come back to the brew pub and check out what we have to offer. So, you know, the packaged offerings really are a good promotional tool for your brewery. And as opposed to traditional marketing, you're actually making money off your marketing in this sense and selling your product. So we also do, brewery exclusive bottle releases. You've probably seen on the web, you know, it seems like more and more these things are like disasters waiting to happen. And they're definitely, even if when we do them right, they're still the most stressful days of the year. We have about four big huge releases every year. These are some couple pictures of some different ones. You know, you see our patio is not very large. But it gets pretty crowded in there, and people start lining up around, now we don't let anyone stand in line before 7 a.m., but we've had instances where I got there at 6 a.m., and there was 90 people in line, and they handed me a list of everyone who was already in line. So, managing these things can be very difficult. And they're sharing beers on the patio. Now I've got a liability of people drinking on my patio before we're even open, and all this sort of thing. So there's a lot of considerations to take in mind. If you want to do these things, I mean, they're huge. They're our biggest revenue days of the year. Typically, like a typical Saturday, we'll do like $10,000 in sales. When we do these guys, we do anywhere from 30,000 to 40,000 in sales for a Saturday. So they're huge, huge, huge influxes of cash flow into our business. So what you want to do, though, is you need to come up with a transparent, simple, fair policy for dealing with these huge crowds. What we do is you get a wristband when you show up, and we call your group number. In order, and when we're sold, and we allocate based on how many people showed up. So if we have 1,000 bottles and 400 people showed up, you know, we just do the math and everyone gets 2 bottles, and then, you know, and then you can get back in line or something like that. So we don't try to say it's a 5 bottles, and then if you're late, you're late. Too bad. Yes, ma'am. We do have it on tap at the pub also, and then we'll also throw a bunch of other rare stuff on tap as well that's not available in bottles. So, yeah, the key is not just getting people to pick up your bottle and leave, although we do get some of that. But, our food sales are, you know, anywhere from 100 to 200% bigger on those days as well. Correct. Yeah, and I put that because I'm kind of in between two worlds right now, where we're about to roll into the market. So we'll continue to do this even when we're out in the market, and there'll be bottles that are only at the pub that we're not selling to our distributor. Right, right. So the question is, you know, is this a new beer that or something? It's basically, you know, So a lot of the releases are beers that come out once a year. And it's like, so the first Saturday of November, we release our Imperial Stout. And it's, everyone knows, first Saturday of November is when the bottles go on sale. And they're only available here at the pub. And, you know, if you want bottles, come wait in line, kind of thing. Our Wild Ales usually sell out, you know, we don't even make it all the way through the line. Because, you know, they're that one time to get it, you know. And it's kind of however your brewery's reputation has been built. You know, a lot of people wait in line for, you know, people used to drive up to Vermont, right, to pick up cases of Heady Topper or whatever's popular at your brewery might work for you. You know, for us, it's definitely our wild ales. They're definitely what we're kind of probably most known for, but they make up this like 1% of our volume in a year. But you know, the I think the key is kind of on that next point, making sure the beer is worthy. You know, because there's nothing worse you can do than hyping up this event. Like, hey, you're only going to be able to buy this beer today at the pub, and then you have, you know, it's not up to par. Consumers are going to be mad that they wasted their day. They're going to be mad that they wasted their money, and now they have a bottle of beer that they don't think is, you know, is worthy. So that's what I would say, you know, kind of tying into an overall theme of the conference, quality, quality, quality. If you're going to do something like this, absolutely make sure it's worth it, especially because these things have a tendency to, they're always at risk of going south. So, you know, Cigar City recently had at one of their big releases, you know, outside of their own control. I think people were counterfeiting tickets or something like that. But there's lots of ways this can spiral out of control. So approach with caution, I guess, is my advice there. So last year we did 1,700 bottles of Imperial Stout for that one day. So and that's the only beer that we do. We brew two batches of. So we make 30 barrels of that beer. We package up about half of it, and then we have the other half on draft. But we have events too where you know, we might have had two 53-gallon barrels of wild ale. And that's what we packaged up, and then we have one keg, and all the rest is packaged. But that's because we find our normal customers, our everyday regulars, don't really care for the wild ales. You know, they're chugging an IPA, and they could care less. But all the people who come visit us from around the state, they want that bottle of wild ale. We did actually shift, though, because things were getting a little crazy. Our most rarest stuff, so we have this peach wild ale, we just do silent release. We just stick it on the shelf randomly, you know, one case at a time. So Tuesday afternoon, we just stick a case on the shelf, and we limit customers to one bottle a person, and they just kind of disappear, you know. And so we lose out on that, you know, mad dash that one day that brings in all that revenue. But it's sometimes the headache isn't worth the event, is what we're starting to learn. So definitely a great revenue generator, but definitely make sure you have the staff and the wherewithal to pull it off. It's going to be your most stressful day of the year by far. So a couple little legal considerations. This is my last slide, and then we can open up to some more questions. So if you're a brew pub and you are not distributing, or even if you are distributing but you're not leaving the state, great news, TTB label approval not required. You still need to file your formulations, I believe, if you're distributing. But TTB label approval not required by the TTB. However, your state may or may not require you to get their label approval, and their label approval may require TTB approval. So you may want to check with your state ABC, see what that's all about. We were able to get our ABC to say, okay, well, if the feds don't require it, we're not going to require it. They only require the state. Also, fortunately, in Texas, if we don't distribute it, we don't need label approval at all. So if it's sold just directly to customers, we can just, you know, make any label we want, stick it on the bottle, doesn't need to be approved. But I would make sure, even if it's not required, you know, make sure you're putting your government warning on there, you know, just to safeguard yourself. And then, you know, be sure to check your local and state rules for sales of packaged products. You know, hours may be different from when your brew pub's allowed to be open. So, for example, if you're open till 2 a.m., you know, serving your restaurant and bar, you may not be able to sell a packaged product after midnight, for example, or after 9 p.m. So just make sure you have all your P's and Q's crossed. There may be local zoning issues you need to be aware of that, you know, you're only licensed for on-premise consumption, maybe not off-premise, and maybe you've been getting away with growlers. But, you know, there is a difference in the way a growler is treated, you know, as a very large glass by TTB regulations, whereas a bottle is treated as a, you know, prepackaged product. So just be aware of that. So that's it. So if anyone has any other questions, I'd be more than happy to tackle them. Yes, sir. Yeah, so we have a 3-door cooler, and we can fit maybe 52, 59. We can fit about 3/4 of a pallet in a cooler at a time. Typically, our cooler is about half full, and we turn a pallet about every quarter. If we have a big release, you know, I mean, I've had times where I bought 2 pallets, and the next week I had to buy 2 more. Because we're doing like one of the big releases, but that's pretty rare. We're usually turning our glass inventory quarterly. Yeah. If you have any questions, I was reminded, please use the microphone because this is being recorded, and we want your questions to show up on the recording.
I was wondering if you're filtering or centrifuging and what kind of shelf life you're getting out of your products.
Yeah, we're not doing any of that. You know, on shelf life, you know, it kind of depends on the beer. We see the normal degradation of hop character over time in our products. Our DO levels are higher than we would like them to be. We don't have a DO meter like probably nobody in this room does. But when we've had them tested, our DO levels are a little higher than we'd like. But, you know, if we're doing something like our Wild Ales or Imperial Stout, you know, they hold up pretty well if they're well taken care of. So for every beer we package, we hold back a case. And so we hold 3 bottles that we don't refrigerate at all after packaging. We have 3 bottles that we don't refrigerate for 24 hours and then stick in the cooler. And then we have 3 bottles that we refrigerate right away, or 6 bottles we refrigerate right away. And then we check them every quarter. So we check it 3 months, 6 months, 9 months out. And so long as we don't get any major flaws or contamination issues, we don't, you know, we kind of chalk it up to typical aging of beer. But definitely we're far less sophisticated at the pub than we would be like at our packaging facility. It'll be a more robust QC program. So I would just, you know, don't expect to have, you know, super high quality shelf or super high shelf life on these smaller machines as well.
Do you have a number, like a dedicated, that you're going to put into bottles, like a production percentage of your production that you're going to package and versus selling at your brew pub?
No, you know, we kind of, it depends. We don't have a hard and fast. You know, sometimes we'll package it up because we're like, hey, this IPA, you know, an IPA is we typically turn a tank of IPA in 2 weeks. And we might look like, okay, it's been a week, and we've got 1/4 of it left, and we've got another IPA ready to come in. And so we use the packaging line actually to clear capacity. And so just the packaging line itself added capacity to our brewery because we can use it to clear out serving tanks and make more room. So that's another thing. It's an alternative to, you know, kegging it up, basically. So that's kind of how we tackle it. But like on big releases, you know, like our Imperial Stout, we know we're going to have to brew 30 barrels. We know X amount's going to go in bottles. And if we're going to have a release party, we let people know a week in advance. This is how many bottles there are. You know, so you know, here's the probable limit if there's going to be one. You know, pricing. all that sort of stuff. So they're not a hard and fast, but we try to tackle it before we package. Yeah.
Do you do any pre-packaging of your growlers with a Blickman, or do you see any advantage to that, or you just fill off the faucets?
Yeah, we just fill off the faucets, which, you know, I know there's been a lot of discussion on that lately. Ideally, personally, I'd love to, you know, get off the growler completely in the long run. I'm hoping when we have our production facility open and that's able to supply our core brands and package that the growler will kind of go away. But yeah, we do it all off our faucets now.
When you do a special release, what sort of communication channels are you using to get that information to your customer?
Yeah, so we typically in the past, just Facebook and Twitter, rolled out an app for iOS and Android back in 2012. So we'll also send push alerts that way. And to get people to download our app, you know, we kind of tell them, like, you know, you'll be the first to know if something's being released through the app. And like when we do a silent release, we'll usually roll it out by doing for 24 hours. We're not going to say anything about it. And just people at the pub will pick it up. If it's still around after 24 hours, we'll send a push alert. And then we've never had to go past that. But yeah, we just use the social media channels. You know, Facebook is getting more and more difficult to get any value out of with their recent changes to how posts are viewed. So we're going to have to see how that gets handled, you know, going forward. Also, putting it on your website is an obvious one, but it assumes, you know, traffic is going to be driven to your website. Any other questions? Well, cool. Well, thanks a bunch. If you have any other questions, you can reach me on Twitter, by email. So I'll just do that one.
I just wanted to let everybody know that the slides, this dazzling array of financial number crunching, is going to be available on the Brewers Association website under the members-only section. So,
awesome. Thanks.